This episode of the Ringer NFL Show is presented by State Farm. Create an affordable price just for you when you choose to bundle home and auto. Bundling, just another way to save with the personal price plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
This episode is brought to you by Indeed. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/RingerNFL. Just go to Indeed.com/RingerNFL right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, everybody? I'm JJ John Stremski.
And I'm Jason Goff. And if you haven't heard, The Ringer has gone local.
I'm bringing the fire. I'm bringing the rain from the Big Apple with my show, New York, New York.
And I'm repping Chi-Town with my new show, The Full Goal, on all things Chicago.
We've got episodes 3 nights a week with all the reaction to the local teams and guests.
Plus bonus episodes around all the big games and storylines.
So whether you're uptown, downtown, in the burbs, or a transplant,
make sure you follow New York, New York, and The Full Goal on Spotify or wherever you get your podcast.
It is the Ringer NFL Show, part of the Ringer Podcast Network. I'm Kevin Clark, joined on a Tuesday morning for a holiday edition. New schedule. It's Nora Princiotti. Nora, what's going on?
Happy holidays, Kevin. I'm in the holiday spirit.
You have a Christmas tree behind you. There's a Santa hat on the Christmas tree.
There is.
Wow. I don't. With no Christmas tree. And that's, we only have a couple days to sort that out. What we do have is some bad football. We're going to break that down. Bears Vikings on Monday night. Browns Raiders. The Chris Godwin injury, which we'll get into. A couple of big picture things with the quarterbacks and the coaches that we saw last night. Let's start, I guess, with the Vikings and the Bears. Dan Pompey, I think, made the best point about this, which is that I think there were 14 Bears missing due to COVID, and it looked the exact same as what it's supposed to look like. Like, if you had just drawn up what a Bears primetime game is, and by the way, like, it's not the Bears' fault they keep getting into primetime. Whoever in the league office is like, we need more Bears primetime. We have some notes for the league office about this.
Come on, you don't love those vertical shots of the city of Chicago? They don't make it all worth it.
And the booth eating Chicago pizza in the booth. Oh, there it is. Like, that's not going to save anything. There was a desperation to this game that you could have just, if you'd written it down in an envelope for the game and said, what does this game look like? You would have been 100% correct when you pulled it out at the end. So this game went exactly how we knew it was going to go. What'd you think?
I think that's the right point, right? Like, I have stuff written down like, Thomas Graham Jr. exclamation point. And I don't know how to feel about that, right? Because it's like, all right, does the fact that, you know, the baby Bears backup secondary was actually pretty good.
Right.
Does that tell us that there's personnel misevaluations going on? I don't know. Like, we're not seeing practice. We don't know enough to really seriously make that evaluation. Like, maybe Kirk Cousins just decided to stink. Maybe it was just a weird game. Like, I don't know. But I also know that the Bears have sort of lost the benefit of the doubt where you're going, okay, fine. Maybe, like, this is not starting CB1 of the future. But it does make you think, like, how many stones are left unturned here? And there's not enough faith in the organization to be like, no, that can't be right. It's like, no, it might be, because, yeah, like, who would have expected that to be all that different other than the Vikings, like, somehow playing their first non-close game on, like, the worst night for their offense.
Okay, so Matt Nagy has the ability to plunge his team into despair so thoroughly. Like, this is going to be his first losing season ever. Like, he made the playoffs last year, and it just feels like one of the worst coaching tenures of all time. It's literally just a feeling. Like, he has turned a winning record as a coach, and I know Vic Fangio has a lot to do with that in the first year, because they went 12-4, then 8-8, and then 8-8. But he has a winning record as a coach, and it still feels like a colossal failure. I mean, that's just, and part of that is because of games like this.
He's got a little bit of Bill O'Brien that way.
Yes, exactly. Where Bill O'Brien, the year he got fired, Bill O'Brien was up 24-0 on Patrick Mahomes. And like he turned that into the end of his career. Bill O'Brien took that and was like, watch me end my career this way. Like that, and only Nagy and that's Bill O'Brien impressive. Are capable of that. I did think it was interesting, Nora, like, he was kind of fiery last night, Nagy. And it reminds, yeah. I think there were people who thought, he, including me, I thought maybe he was trying to get kicked out of the game, maybe light a fire. Like, I think he was looking for a headline there. Like, Nagy's not going down without a fight. I talked to people who know Matt Nagy. They say they actually kind of doubt that, that he had some grand plan. I think he was maybe just angry and blowing a gasket and spiking a challenge flag.
You think Matt Nagy might have been unhappy about the way that things were going?
In multiple fronts, yes.
That seems possible. I loved, this was from the Pool Report. The reporter who was talking to Scott Novak asked the question, are there magic words that you can't say? And Scott Novak just goes, yes.
Well, he got the one person. So if he'd gotten another unsportsmanlike conduct penalty, he would have been thrown out of the game. And he didn't get it. And when he was spiking the challenge flag, he looked like he was going for it. It reminded me, there's a great, great, great Sports Illustrated article from like 10 years ago by Thomas Lake about Bobby Cox, about how Bobby Cox's whole thing was he would just get thrown out of a game just to spark his team. And I kind of feel like if there was any conspiracy theory, it was Matt Nagy was trying to do that. You know, there have been rumors for a month he's about to get fired. Like, I don't know. I mean, that would maybe be the only plan. But again, the one thing I don't want to do is give Matt Nagy too much credit. Like, right, that's the whole thing. And like, I'm actually surprised that we don't see more of this from Nagy on the field. Like, just in the sense that the thing I always hear is he always sweats the small stuff. Like, we saw that manifest itself when he tried out signed six kickers and tried out many more a couple of years ago. You know, kind of flustered with the media all the time from what I hear. And like the fact that he doesn't blow a gasket more on the sideline is a little bit surprising. And now that we're getting close to the end, I guess it's just only natural he'd be upset. Okay. So let's talk big picture about the Bears here for a second. Justin Fields looked okay last night when he had a clean pocket. The splits from PFF were pretty remarkable in that front. He was he had a 44% completion percentage under pressure, 73% completion percentage when kept clean. His yards per attempt more than doubled when kept clean, not a surprise. And he needs to stay upright. This is the end of Matt Nagy. I don't think there's any sort of question about that. It was interesting to me. Brad Spielberger put these numbers up this morning that Fields now ranks fifth in big-time throw percentage, according to PFF, first in percentage of passes thrown beyond the first down marker, 47%. So that's an interesting number. And obviously, he's sloppy. He fumbles the ball. He takes these sacks. He makes mistakes. I mean, we saw even last night, like when he got hit inbounds, the one that led to the Tevin Jenkins penalty. He got hit inbounds, and it's like he waited to the last second, still got clobbered, and then couldn't even draw a penalty. Right, like he played that the exact wrong way. He has things to do, but a good coach can fix this. And I'm curious, Nora, if you're the Bears right now. If you're a McCaskey or you're a Ted Phillips, you do what?
I think you look for someone, and look, it's come up a few times last night and recently that because of the new interview rules, there's some advantage to, if you're going to move on from your coach, doing it quickly because you can get a jump start on looking for the replacement. I think you, and it's not that this isn't what they've tried to do in the past, right? It's easier said than done, but I think the only thing that you care about is finding the right person to develop Justin Fields.
Right.
Because I was chatting with a personnel exec last night and asked, like, okay, if they redid the first round of the draft tomorrow, what order do the quarterbacks go in now? And his answer was Lawrence is still number one, and then Mac Jones, then Fields, then Wilson, then Lance. Which, by the way, the end of that is interesting to me. But
by the way, I don't want to interrupt you, but it would be curious to know like when Lance would go and when Wilson would go. Would they go like in the 20s?
The thought was Lance might fall out around one.
Okay, yeah, that was my follow up question. It's like, if you redid the draft, is Zach Wilson like the 27th pick?
Right.
Like he's the fourth quarterback, but yeah, Mac Jones probably fifth.
Yeah. So if anything, you know, Fields is sort of around the same, but potentially a little bit more coveted because of particularly, I think, the downfield ability and the explosive playability that he's just put on tape, right? And in a really tough situation, because he was still their red zone offense was a nightmare last night. They didn't score a touchdown inside the red zone four times. Other than that, though, he looked pretty good. And there's clearly the sacks, the play under pressure is not entirely his fault, certainly, because that offensive line is a disaster. But there's a lot to clean up, but there's also just a huge amount of ability. And I've got to imagine that that's incredibly tantalizing to anyone. You know, if you're Josh McDaniels, I don't know how you weigh that against something like Jacksonville. I still think probably just Lawrence is such an unbelievable opportunity that that's like a 1-2 kind of thing. But you find the coach who you think can do the most with Justin Fields, because clearly there's a lot to be done there.
I guess my only advice is just to both those, because Lawrence and Fields will have open coaching vacancies. Just the ownership needs to just stop screwing around and fix it, because, you know, like, the lesson of the last 20 years is that a lot of times quarterbacks don't fail. They are failed. And both of the ownerships have the capability to fail their young quarterbacks. And with Lawrence in particular, you're a guy, you came from Clemson, where I know people joke about it, but like, they are really, really high on character on the roster there. And, you know, he probably came from a culture that he probably really liked. And it was a winning culture. And then he goes to Jacksonville and it's a joke. And Urban Meyer's kicking kickers and he's blaming coaches and he's spending his off days in bars in Ohio. And I just, you have to go out and spend as much money. I mean, that was the thing we learned from this coaching carousel in college over the past couple of weeks. Just go out and spend whatever it takes. Even if you have to trade a draft pick, whatever. I mean, that was the rumor I heard about Chicago, is they were going to go kind of big game hunting to try to save Fields, to go and kind of fix this treadmill once and for all. Because the problem is, like, Matt Nagy was a extremely coveted assistant a couple of years ago. Yeah. I mean, I remember that. I mean, there's a reason that he became the Bears coach when that was open and it was considered a good job. The risk you have is you're going to hire Matt Nagy 4 years ago and you're just going to do this all over again. And so I know that maybe you try to just go out and try to godfather an offer with money and picks to somebody who's really, really established. I don't know. I don't know what it looks like if you're Jacksonville or Chicago. These teams have the money, they have the ambition, and I just please don't screw around and ruin these guys' career because you don't know how to make a hire.
I wouldn't hate it if they did, right? Like, there's always a risk and okay, if you make a godfather offer and somehow that's not the right one, then you spent all these resources and didn't get the guy. But there's a reason that we don't really have anything more to offer here in terms of what they should do than just like find the right guy. There's no formula for it. I mean, we kind of know what not to do in certain situations, like, i.e. maybe don't lay it all on the line for Urban Meyer if he needs people to convince him to come take a job. And there are certain examples where you can see the writing on the wall. A lot of them, there's no set formula for getting it right. So it's just, you know, whatever they do, whether it's perceived as the right move or the wrong move or good or bad, or the person they hire has a sparkling reputation or people have mixed feelings about them, like, there's always going to be this element of like holding your breath and just waiting and seeing. But you've got to imagine that they, at the very least, will be high up on people's lists because of the quarterback. And that's certainly something.
Yeah. I mean, also just because the Bears should be a good job. Like, they should.
Right. It should be.
It's a really great sports town and people really like the Bears. And if you become, I mean, like, Mike Ditka won a Super Bowl in 1985. There's a photo of him behind every bar in Chicago. Like, you become a god there. I mean, it's like winning in a huge college program or something. So it should be a well-sought-after job. It will be a well-sought-after job. I'm just saying that the risk that, I mean, the problem with the NFL in general is that it's a kind of a closed loop. And there's no other, I was talking to somebody about this yesterday, where it's like every other sport, there's at least a vaguely analogous league somewhere else, right? Like, if it's European soccer, there's hundreds of leagues you can just choose from. If it's the NBA, people can hire from EuroBasket. Right. There's the G League if you wanted to develop guys. I mean, damn, I went to a Magic game the other day. There were 5 G League players that signed that day. Like, there's more of a minor league system, feeder system. The NFL, this is it. And so you're going to go, okay, well, who are the best coordinators? Well, the Bears already did that. And so I don't know what the answer is, but I do know that part of the problem when you're trying to hire in a situation like this is that you're just going to do the same thing you did 4 years ago and hope it's better this time. And that to me is the problem. Anyway, that's my take.
Can I add one more thing? I'm with you that I think it's more likely that Nagy's just mad. I do think that coaches should try to get ejected. I want someone to just make a real honest go at it.
But it's the problem is with Nagy, I agree with you. I'm 100% in agreement with you. The problem is it's way too late. It's way too late. And Nagy's made so many coaching mistakes.
It's not too late to entertain me.
Oh, yeah. No, on that. But like, you just look at the totality of this. I mean, I was thinking about Nagy the other day, and it's like, everything that he had, like, remember this BS about the Mahomes model? The Mahomes model was going to be in Chicago. Like, what were we doing? The Andy Dalton was going to play the Alex Smith role. Does anyone know what the Mahomes model was?
The Mahomes model is having Patrick Mahomes.
But
that's
also,
the Mahomes
also they
model.
Had the one of the best offensive play callers in the history of the sport as head coach. They had Matt Nagy working with Alex Smith that year, and then they had Mike Kafka, who was the quarterback's coach, basically be Patrick Mahomes' private coach that year. And then Alex Smith helped him, obviously, in the quarterback room as well. And so it takes a village to raise a quarterback.
Also, they were good.
That's what I'm saying. Alex Smith was actually good, whereas Andy Dalton was not good. And so they had all of this infrastructure here. The Bears had none of it. Is there any evidence that the Bears had a coach even remotely as good as Mike Kafka, let alone Andy Reid, let alone Eric Bieniemy, all those guys? Like, they didn't have the depth and coaching staff to have the Mahomes model, nor did they have Mahomes, nor did they have Alex Smith. Like, that to me is should have been a red flag. Anyway, point being, too far gone for Matt Nagy. The next coach should start getting kicked out like second game of the season. It's like second game of his career. If Kellen Moore gets that job, I want him out of there in the second quarter of the second game.
I'm into it, but I do think there's a little bit of, you could do a little last minute reputation laundering by getting kicked out of a game, I think. Because I do think that a critical mass of people then tack on the, yeah, but remember when he got kicked out? Like, that was awesome, to their Matt Nagy reflections if he goes and does it.
Is there anything image-wise that could save Matt Nagy's image right now and, like, prop him up for a good... Like, if he goes to a press conference tomorrow, he knows he's getting fired, and he says, what? What is the best way to go out?
Maybe if he rapped. Like, we got convinced that Drew Locke was good for, like, 2 years because he, like, rapped for 30 seconds. I think Matt Nagy could try that.
I was going to say that he should just go to a press conference and detail all of the horrendous mistakes he made and why he made them. Just total transparency.
Like full accountability.
Total transparency, yeah. And be like, everybody sit down, have a little coffee jug for the reporters. Just like an hour of just, here's why I screwed up. And then maybe he gets a better job next time.
Well, that's the other thing is that, like, if you give journalists free junk food.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's, or you good. Just say their names back to them, which is the cheat code.
Yeah. Just say their names, bring snacks, and then. Yeah, not like full accountability for the sake of accountability, but just for like the sake of sort of voyeurism, people being like, oh, that sounds like a disaster. Now I'm entertained. Now I like you. You've contributed to a positive experience for me.
Media management for coaches is the easiest thing in the world. Just say yes to whatever weird premise a reporter has, and then just say their name back to them, and every beat writer in America will love you. Easy to do. And free food.
Oh, hold up. Smell test. Go ahead, sniff those pits. Now, your bits. Feet, toes, come on. Ugh. Could be fresher, right? It's all good. Old Spice Total Body Deodorant Spray is gentle enough to use all over your body, giving you 24/7 lasting freshness with daily use, from pits to toes and down below. So every smell test gets a... Shop for Old Spice Total Body Deodorant.
Vikings. We didn't even talk about them at all.
Yeah. So they need Adam Thielen back, which seems like is probably going to happen because he was trying out his ankle during warmups, and then they made him inactive. So maybe he can get back next week. But again, I'm not willing to appoint the Baby Bears secondary as these diamonds in the rough that we've only not seen this season because of mismanagement after one game, right? But it's not great that Cousins looked that bad playing against a secondary of backups. But part of it was they could just bracket Justin Jefferson all the time. And they're in the playoff picture right now, but they have the Rams, Packers, and then the Bears again. So they need him, I think. And it's funny that on such a bad night for their offense, they were finally able to not play a one score game. I guess maybe you look at that and think like, okay, they've got tough games coming up, but if the Vikings are capable of one thing, it's generally playing to the level of their competition. So maybe when you're playing the Rams and Packers, that's a good thing. But it's hard to feel good about 3.6 yards per attempt for Kirk Cousins. Absolutely nothing downfield. But again, I do think some of that improves a little bit if Jefferson's not getting just like all of the attention.
Have you played around with the ESPN playoff scenarios?
I always play around with the 538.
Well,
ones.
So the ESPN one has, you can put in, it's easier to do all the games. Like, because 538 only has the next two games. So as you said, the Vikings are in right now. They still have the Packers on the schedule. There's some real chaos that could happen here. Like, if just the winning percentage, if just the teams are supposed to win the games for the rest of the season, the Bills and the Patriots would play in the first round.
Woo-hoo-hoo!
McDermott would hate that.
So McDermott, if I had to put money on like a good coach getting kicked out of a game, it's Sean McDermott.
Oh, that's a great point.
Like, there's like there's a world in which you only get kicked out of a game if you're a bad coach who's going to probably get fired and you're doing it as like a last ditch effort to do whatever. There's also a world in which, and this is the world I want to live in, where we normalize this and coaches just like do it sometimes. And Sean McDermott, who I think is one of the best coaches in the NFL, has a real tendency to run a little hot under the collar.
That's a great one. That's a great one. I'm looking at the playoffs right now. I feel like Cliff could use a rebrand as a guy who gets kicked out. I feel like he's running a little cold right now.
Yeah, that would be weird. I don't think, like, Cliff is so calm.
I know, but that's why you do it. That's why you do it. Like, Matt Nagy is not the kind of guy you think is going to do it, but he did it. He tried. Yeah. He tried.
Yeah,
so they have the Rams on Sunday, so this problem must probably sort itself out. But do you remember the listener question we got on Sunday that was like, should the Cardinals and the Bengals hope to lose out and miss the playoffs so they can get a new coach? The answer probably to both of those was no. And we went through it on Sunday. But I actually do think that it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world for the Vikings franchise if they just missed out this year, didn't get the seventh seed. I mean, like, what are they going to do? Go into Dallas and win? Go into LA and win in January? Go into Tampa and win? Like, I don't see that. So maybe miss out this year and just kind of retool the franchise, make some coaching changes, and it just might be time for them. You know, as you said last night, Kirk Cousins, 1 of 6 beyond 20 yards, 3.6 yards per attempt. I feel a retool coming, and I thought it was a nice performance for them last night. Obviously, without 14 COVID players on the Bears, it was a different deal. But it just, you know, it might be time for both these franchises.
Yeah, well, I think the difference there is the Vikings have just been so mediocre for 4 years, basically, right? I mean, there's a playoff appearance in there, but 7-7 so far this year. They're 7-9 last year, 10-6, 8-7, 8-7-1. They have been sort of just like balancing right on the edge of, okay, we paid Kirk Cousins all of this money. We have a few really good players, but there's no depth. The defense has struggled in years when, you know, Zimmer's felt like it shouldn't have. They've never made a clear decision over or reached a clear decision point to be like, we got to blow this up and start it again. They've always been a little too good to do that, but they've also been not good enough to make anything real out of it.
Well, that's and that's the great middle of the NFL where nothing ever happens.
And it's a little bit more angsty for the Vikings to be there because of how much money the quarterback makes. But I do think that I'm with you that the answer to that question is almost always no. Like, if making the playoffs is still hard, if you can do it that's meaningful to fans. That's an accomplishment.
Wasn't meaningful to Bears fans last year.
Okay, well, the 7 seed is stupid. I hate the 7 seed.
I just like that one thing that's important is ownership is clearly just not taking the 7 seed as seriously. Like, they're not, like, I mean, the whole thing about, like, oh, they expanded the NCAA tournament and now coaches are all keeping their jobs because they can make it. Like, the NFL has decided the 7 seed is just not a thing. So we're moving on from it.
It's good. That's good. That gives me hope. But yeah, it would be good for them to, if something forced the Vikings to hit reset, I would not have a problem with that, certainly.
All right, Raiders Browns. This one was tough. 22 players on the COVID reserve list, including 10 starters for the Browns. They still had a chance to win. They went from a so this is kind of the AFC in a nutshell. And this was a similar situation to what happened with the Ravens on Sunday, but not as dramatic. So if the Browns had won last night, they temporarily would have been the 4 seed. They would have had about a 1-2 chance to make the playoffs. They would have been the division leader. They now have a 16% chance to make the playoffs and are the 12 seed currently in the AFC. That is how stacked together the AFC is right now, and that's why you can't lose a game like this, and that's why there's sort of a cruelty in what happens if you are out 22 players, including 10 starters, in a week where there's a winnable game. This is brutal for the Browns franchise. I think it's going to have kind of long-term ramifications. What'd you think?
Well, they couldn't get a first down when they needed one, right? Like, first of all, thank you to the Browns for ultimately making this an entertaining game, because Mullins pulled it together somehow, brings them back from 10 to nothing, but all they needed to do was get a first down. And Carr wouldn't have gotten the ball back. And through some combination of, look, I get being pretty conservative with the game plan in that situation, right? But then you get to a moment like that, and I don't know if it would have been different if they decided to throw the ball once, right? But you do kind of get to a point where it's like you might have to take a risk. Right. When you're without 10 starters, you have to take some risks to win the game and stay in contention. And I think that's really tough. I mean, they've got Green Bay on Saturday.
That, by the way, the Saturday thing is brutal.
Yeah. No, going from Monday to Saturday is just absolutely brutal. I mean, I guess on the other hand, half the team didn't play. So
I thought about that. Silver lining, I thought about that. Least, yeah. Like, they're well rested.
Some of them are fresh. But so you probably get Mayfield, Landry, Austin Hooper are likely to come back.
Miles Garrett couldn't move at the end of that game.
Yeah, that was tough. And they lost Tack McKinley.
So it kind of, it's not going to be good. But also, I mean, again, 13% chance to win the division, which is really their only path to making the playoffs. This is going to be a real tough road.
It's tough if this is how the end of the line looks, right? Because, you know, you just have, you're not going down with your team. Right. Like, if this is the game that leaves the Browns out of the playoffs, they didn't really get a chance to do it with the guys who are normally on the roster. But
With their coach. They didn't get a chance to do it with their coach. Missing the playoffs for the Browns this year. It's interesting because the narrative on this team has changed so much. I think we all really liked them coming into the season. When Mayfield had the initial injury, I actually had written them off and said the ceiling on this team is much lower. They can still win some games, but they're not going to compete for the playoffs. That has changed. They actually competed for the playoffs. So in a weird way, they didn't come close to me with my expectations, and then they exceeded my revised expectations. I'm curious. I just want to talk big picture here because I don't really necessarily want to get into the nitty-gritty of that particular game because it was brutal. Do you think missing the playoffs for the Browns, even as strange as it happened, and with this game yesterday where they were out 22 guys, do you think that this changes the outlook on Baker Mayfield and just how Andrew Berry's going to go up building that roster?
I don't really, because I don't think it would be a smart decision if it really did. And I think that they are a smart organization, right? Like, Baker wasn't playing. And while it happens all the time, and it is human nature that things like squeaking into the playoffs by the skin of your teeth at the end of a season change perceptions from ownership and lead to teams making important decisions, I think the Browns are going to be pretty clear-headed about the decisions that they have to make going forward. The tough part of that is that what to do with Baker Mayfield from a contract standpoint is genuinely like the most vexing question in football right now.
Before the season, it was already a head scratching, right? Or not head scratch, but like that was the thing that everybody talked about. What do you do with Baker Mayfield when the market for him is over $30 million and he's probably not worth that? And you can probably get a huge percentage of his production somewhere else for a lot less money. And so I it's kind of a butterfly effect. In a game he doesn't play in, you know, it gives you an out to now they're not going to make the playoffs. It gives you an out and it gives you the ability to start over. I honestly don't know what you do. I think you probably offer him a quote unquote below market extension, because that is probably his value is not in these mega contracts, not a Josh Allen situation, not what Lamar Jackson's going to be offered eventually or has been offered eventually, and will sign eventually. I don't know what you do. One thing I know is Andrew Berry is, and I've heard him talk about it, not even just to me, but to other folks as well. You know, he tries to make decisions in a vacuum. And he tries to have as little bias as possible. And so I agree with you in as much as that they're not going to let this particular game determine how much money they allocate to their quarterback or if they allocate any money to their quarterback. But I do feel like it has the possibility to just change the course of the short term. And I don't know. I mean, it is one of the most fascinating things. We haven't really had a quarterback like this. I mean, we had, you know, going back to, if everybody remembers, but 2012, 2013, 2014, when a lot of quarterbacks, Russell Wilson being one, he made less money than the team's long snapper the year they won the Super Bowl. Colin Kaepernick was another, where these guys were on like mid-round rookie contracts, and they were just crushing it. And everyone said, well, you're going to see the end of kind of borderline extensions. And I remember the litmus test in this was Jay Cutler. And it was like, okay, with Jay Cutler, he can't win a Super Bowl with the Bears. They're not going to give him all that money. They can go find out elsewhere. And then they just gave him a $126 million contract in 2014. I remember someone saying that to me, like, early 2013. Like, look, the Bears are going to take a stand. Jay Cutlers of the world are never going to make that money. And then they just did, right? And he made a bunch. And that just kept happening. And we saw kind of the 2015, 2016, 2017. Remember that time where Derek Carr and Matt Stafford and all those guys were taking turns being the highest paid player in football.
Right.
That's just the price of doing business to quarterback. And what I'm intrigued to see is how Andrew Berry approaches the fact that for a quarterback who's not top tier, but that is the price of doing business with them. How does a guy like that approach the quarterback position? Someone had tweeted at me a couple weeks ago that in an interview I had done with him, Barry, before last season, I didn't even remember this, that he had said that if you don't have the quarterback position sorted out, you're a neutral. And someone said to me, well, does he feel like the Browns are neutral right now? And at the time, he didn't feel that way. I mean, and he didn't feel that way before the season either. He likes Baker Mayfield. But how the Browns and Stefanski and Barry view the quarterback position to me in the next couple of months is maybe the most fascinating story in football.
I feel the same way, particularly because, look, there are elements of the quarterback market that are sort of out of whack in that you have situations like, I think you could argue that Josh Allen, for instance, is not maybe providing the Bills with quite as much value as they are paying for him. Also, if they had to redo that contract tomorrow, it's happening the exact same way, because there's sort of value as you break it down to, you know, dollars and cents and EPA and numbers. But most of these things, close to all of these things, are completely based on precedent. And the Baker Mayfield situation feels like the closest thing we've seen in a while to a situation where you could argue it's worth trying to break a precedent for. Can you get a starting quarterback signing an extension with the team that drafted him to take a below market deal? That's not a thing that really happens very much. It's not a thing that's happened in an analogous situation in a really long time. It's hard, because agents don't want to do it because it looks like a failure on their part. Players don't want to do it because it says something about how much the team, you know, believes in them. And the team is always going to argue for, you know, whatever gives them the most flexibility and saves them the most on cost. In a perfect world, you would look at the Baker Mayfield situation and go, all right, this is one where it might be worth meeting in the middle, right? Like, the Browns have given us quite a bit of evidence that with a healthy Baker Mayfield, they are a playoff team. Things go wrong in any given season. That doesn't necessarily mean they're going to make the playoffs every year, but they've shown that that's what they can do. It's just, these are human beings and you start to put it all together and, you know, you can make a strong argument even just for going year to year using the fifth year option, using the franchise tag. But again, how does the person respond to that? Like, Baker Mayfield, for better and for worse, is not, has a track record of telling people how he feels.
That's correct.
And you wonder if that would turn into another situation like that. Because honestly, like, no one asked for my opinion. If it were me, I would be really, really, really tempted to just go year to year, because you can do that for quite a few years.
You can do it for 3 years after the fifth year extension or fifth year option. You can do it for 3 freaking years, although it gets expensive.
Yeah, but if you take the option plus 2 tags, it's still, I believe the average of that still comes in under 30 a year. And that's a much nicer place to be than over. But we'll see. I agree with you that it's one of the most fascinating questions right now.
All right, Chris Godwin out for the season. This is brutal. You know, we even heard a lot of Godwin praise on the from Arians, via Arians, on the broadcast on Sunday night about his blocking and all that stuff. He makes people miss. We saw how valuable he's been in some really big games since Brady came to Tampa. And this changes things. They're going to get Antonio Brown back. Bruce Arians said yesterday he doesn't care about what anybody says about his views on Antonio Brown. What he said in the past with Antonio Brown, Brown's going to come back. He's going to play. But they lose an element of their offense. What do you think?
Yeah, well, the question is who is going to fill the slot receiver role, right? Because one of the things that made the Bucs win the Super Bowl last year was that they had just unbelievable depth at wide receiver and at all the pass-catching positions. Now, you can look at that two ways, right? Like, they don't have the same ability to just come at you with Evans, Godwin, Antonio Brown, then you have the tight ends. At the same time, you do still have, you know, you're getting a pass catcher with a good track record playing with Brady and Antonio Brown back. It sounded like Mike Evans also got hurt in that game, but apparently he's going to be fine. You still have an enviable group of receivers. The thing I think is very few of those guys, like even the smaller ones, even, you know, like Scotty Miller, he's not really a slot receiver. He's not really, like, he doesn't really play that. He's really more comfortable on the outside, even though he's sort of like small and shifty. They don't have a guy who can do even the JV version of what Godwin does. So then the question is, do you change the offense in any significant way to account for that? Do they go back a little bit to more of the type of offense that they ran last season, where it just seemed like Arians' influence was more of the dominant one? Whereas this year, it just seems like a little bit more like Brady's sort of had a year plus to put his fingerprints on the thing. And maybe there's a reversion to more of the downfield stuff that they were doing last year, which is not necessarily bad, but it's just Godwin, he does so much in terms of being able to work the middle of the field, helping them block, and they're really going to miss that because it gives them a lot of flexibility. And while they have guys where they can, you know, they can put a starting offense on the field where you're going to go like, oh, that's a talented group, it's just not the same structurally without him. So I think it's a big loss.
So there were two players that Arians on the broadcast compared to Godwin that he'd played with or that he'd coached before. One was Hines Ward, who is retired, had multiple media gigs. He's good. The other one played last year and is bopping around golf courses all over America, and it's Mr. Larry Fitzgerald. Now, Larry Fitzgerald was actually asked last week if he would come back to play for the Cardinals after the DeAndre Hopkins injury, and he said no. But he has not been asked, he's not been asked if he would like to come to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and try to win a ring, play with Tom Brady, who I think he has some sort of podcast with, and they also have the connection that Belichick loves Larry Fitzgerald more than any human being on the planet. But if I'm Bruce Arians, I just make the call to Larry Fitz and say, hey man, how about 6 weeks of just making a few million bucks, blocking, making some catches, being a good locker room guy? Let's just see how it goes. I know he's old. I know he's not what he was. He's not even close to what he was. But he'd be a nice option to have for the Bucks in that
role. Yeah, get him out of the podcast racket, too. Clear out, Larry.
More market share for us, baby.
Heck yeah.
He's on the Let's Go podcast with Tom Brady.
Oh, the Let's Go podcast. Someday we're going to do a deep dive on the Let's Go podcast.
Dude, it's pretty good.
It is pretty good.
He gets people on there. He's making jokes. Good. Brady had that joke a couple weeks ago about Julian Edelman going as Wes Welker for Halloween or whatever it was, just saying it was a cheap imitation. And I mean, that was good stuff. We could have Brady on. We'd accept Brady on the Ringer NFL show.
Tom Brady come on the Ringer NFL show challenge. Speaking of Wes Welker, every single time I see Wes Welker on the 49ers sideline, I am surprised to see him there. This has happened at least 15 times. Like, the inability of certain things to lodge themselves in my brain is really remarkable.
Do you remember media night for the Chiefs Niners Super Bowl?
Boy, do I. No.
Okay. Well, were you there?
No, I wasn't. Okay,
then that's why, you know, Welker was just wearing street clothes. He was wearing just like a kind of like one of those, you know, like J. Crew 2010, like tablecloth type button down shirts, just standing there. And I don't think most people knew he was a Niners assistant coach. Like, I think people just thought he was just like a member of the media. He was just standing in the middle there and he was answering questions and stuff. He didn't want to answer questions. He doesn't like that sort of, I mean, because everyone's going to ask about Brady or whatever. And he just wants to talk about the actual Niners receivers. But yes, I think that's the vibe, is people forget that Wes Welker's there all the time. He was a Texans assistant before that with Bill O'Brien.
Yes, true. Correct.
The best kind of incognito media day story is that an Eagles kicker named Jake Elliott, he's still the Eagles kicker, he was walking with Jason Gallagher and Roger Sherman, and he had his credential in his jacket, okay? And this is at media night. And he's just walking around with the Ringer video team, and I'm like, what's going on over here? And they told me that he didn't want to answer questions. So he just decided to just latch on with the Ringer, and I don't think he knew who we were. And he just wanted to pretend like he was a media member. So he was just following around like Jason Gallagher.
And I bet you if anybody went up,
he fit right in. He fit right in.
He was going to say, hello, I'm Kevin Clark. That's great. That's all. That's hysterical.
So there you go. Anyway, that's how we'll end this podcast. Anything else, bud?
No, that's it. I was just Googling Jake Elliott to see if I could, like, if I squint, if I could mistake him.
He could be on the Ringer video team.
Totally.
All right. Next up on this feed is the Wednesday preview show, getting you ready for all of this week's action. We'll be back on Sunday. Myself, Nora, Stephen Ruiz. Thank you to Chris Sutton for his production help with additional production supervision by Arjuna Ramkapoor. This has been the Ringer NFL show on the Ringer Podcast Network.